Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Michael Gutierrez, 16 years of volunteer and career experience, a senior firefighter with the Houston Fire Department housed at Company 51 on the southwest side, which is dubbed as Always Rolling. When you hear the run stats and hear the yearly working fire statistics they go to, then the motto will make sense. My conversation with Michael is a testament to what the fire service should be about. Upholding traditions, keeping each other accountable, wanting to go out and train for the unknown, being physically / mentally prepared, and sometimes being vulnerable and letting others know you're not okay. I truly appreciate Michael for opening up and sharing his story and hope others hear the gems and nuggets being dropped along the way. With that, I present Mr. Michael Gutierrez.
All right, what's up, guys? My name is Mike Gutierrez, firefighter with the City of Houston, Firehouse 51. Been in the fire service going on 16 years. Got on about 2009 as a volunteer. Kind of going backwards, I was one of those kids that when I grew up, I wanted to be a fireman. I really meant it. I've had a lot of mentors throughout my whole lifespan. Going back, in high school, my sister-in-law was dating a San Antonio fireman, and one day he kind of pulled me aside and looked at me, and he was like, "You're going to be a fireman one day," and it was just jokingly. And funny thing is that I wish I had the picture with me, but there's a picture that my mama has of me, my very first Halloween, and I'm a fireman. I grew up right behind Fire Station 41 in San Antonio, Texas. Literally the back, my fence line shares that firehouse. So growing up, I used to see the fire truck going up and down, and I was like, man, I really want to do that. Fast forward, go through high school. I kind of lose sight of being a fireman, and I get into a completely different career field of what I thought would be like in high school. I want to be a chef. I want to go to culinary school. I don't know why. I just wanted to do that. Senior year, my girlfriend at the time get her pregnant, and my dad tells me something that kind of resonates with me to this day. And remember, we were pumping gas and he looked at me and he goes, "Neil, you're going to be flipping burgers for the rest of your life." And I didn't want to hear that. I was like, no, that's not going to be me. I want to do something different. So I ended up pursuing, I graduated high school. I pursued culinary school. I graduated the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Okay. Ended up being a sous chef and worked for the Hyatt Regency Hotel. By this time I'm 18 years old and work in the kitchen, and I realized that this is not what I want to do. And my daughter's getting ready to be born, and I'm like, man, you know, I don't want cooking to be the rest of my life. And one day to the next, me and the executive chef get into an argument, and I drop everything that same day with, you know, no path in front of me. I was like, you know what, I don't want to do this no more. I quit. I want to be a fireman. And I said that in front of him, and he looked at me and laughed at me. And he was like, "You being a fireman," he goes, "ain't no way." And I'm a real big person, and I want to prove people wrong. And when I set my mind to something, I'm determined, and I'm going to make sure that I'm going to achieve that goal. So, and this is how naive I was in the fire service when I first got in. That day, I remember it was the summer of 2008, and I quit the kitchen. And I get in my car, and it's like noon, and I'm driving down to the San Antonio Fire Academy, and I walk in, and to me, it's just a little 19-year-old kid, you know, hood rat, just walking in, and I'm like, "Hey, I want a job, you know, where do I apply?" And they looked at me, and they're like, "No, that's not how it works. There's a civil service process, you have to take the test." And I'm like, "Okay, well, when's the test?" And, "Well, the test already passed, so you're gonna have to wait next year." So I was kind of defeated, walked out with my head down. I'm like, man, this is not my path. And that same day, I don't know what you guys have in North Carolina, but you're North Carolina or South Carolina? So back in the day, you know, broke people had cricket phones and pocket phones. Like, okay. Yes. Yeah, so and back then I had to go to the store and pay my phone bill. And so that same day I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go pay my phone bill and figure this out. Well, I remember there's a long line and there's a guy in front of me and he's wearing his blue shirt and it said UCFD on the back of it. And I'm like, what's that? So I tap on the shoulder and I go, hey man, I don't mean to bother you, but what is a UCFD? He goes, oh, it's a Universal City Fire Department, which is in the San Antonio region. And I'm like, how do I get that job? I go, do I gotta take a test? And he looked at me, he's like, no, man. He goes, you don't have to wait for a civil service exam. You can actually go enroll at a community college. And he gave me the whole blueprint that same day right there at the cricket store. He was like, hey, go to San Antonio College, enroll in the regional fire academy, go to EMT school, and then once you get certified, you can start testing for all these small departments. Because at that time, you know, San Antonio is a hub. You have San Antonio, you have Bexar County, you have all these little cities intertwined. And I always thought that it was all one department. You know, when to, you know, a regular civilian, we're all the same people. They don't know what department is who. They know that, hey, they see a red fire truck, oh, they're part of the fire department. And so that same day I call down there and like I'm determined. I'm like, hey, I wanna join what y'all have. And I talked to this instructor, his name's Eddie Bramhall, and he's on the phone and he's like, well, yeah, he goes, you know, come down, you know, you fill out your FAFSA and we'll get the ball rolling. And I'm like, well, can I go see the academy? And he's like, well, there's really nothing much here. It's an office. Our academy's elsewhere. So I'm like, well, I still want to go down there. So I went down there, did everything that day, did my FAFSA. The semester's coming up. And lo and behold, I make it into that first fire academy class. And man, it just from there it was just waves, man. Just it was a rush. My very first experience in the fire department was there in the academy. I didn't know nothing about the department, and got it going from there, man. And you know, here I am today.
That's awesome. So I do have a question. Did you ever apply for San Antonio first?
Yes, so I tested for San Antonio every single year from 2009 to 2017, and
Damn.
I tested every single year, and they didn't see the magic that was me. I'm kidding. No, so I was a very bad test taker. So I wouldn't really apply myself. I would bomb these civil service exams, and it wasn't until 2017 I made it all the way to the conditional job offer, pending a polygraph. And by this time, I had already been hired with Houston, and my goal was, you know, hey, I'm gonna work for Houston for a little bit, and then, you know, because I was commuting, I used to commute from San Antonio to Houston, you know, every 6 days, get up at, you know, 2:30 in the morning, driving to Houston. You know, we shift change at 6:30. We like to get there at 5:45, and I was doing that every single week, back and forth, back and forth. And I was like, you know what, my end result is I'm gonna give it 5 years. You know, if I don't get on with Houston, I mean, with San Antonio, in the 5 years I'm with Houston, I'm just gonna stay with Houston. Even though, and I kind of went ahead of myself. Houston has been a dream department for me since I was a kid. Like I said, my brother-in-law used to work for Houston Fire Department. His twin brother actually works not too far from me. He's on the rescue truck. They're twins, and he works at Rescue 10 here in Houston. And I always kind of had that like, man, it's like I wanna go to Houston. And you know, when I was in the fire academy, that's all they would talk about. You know, we had a lot of instructors that were Houston firemen, and you know, I always wanted that ambition that I always wanted to be a big city fireman. I didn't just want to be a t-shirt. And I want to like the stuff that, you know, when people look up fire departments, see all these fires and rippers and all that, that's what I wanted to do. I didn't just want to sit somewhere and, you know, wait for the next round. Like I really wanted to be active. And so my dreams were, it's funny because I when I'm talking about it now, I'm thinking about how far I've come. You know, I count my blessings. I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at today. I always wanted to be a Houston fireman. I always wanted to work at Fire Station 51. So it's two of those, like, you know, okay, I got on with Houston. Now I want to make it to 51s. And 51s is probably one of the most well-respected stations in the city of Houston. We are one of the busiest, you know, and as you can tell, I mean, I know I've been sending you stuff every now and then on fires that we make and all that. And but San Antonio was more of a kind of a safe spot to be like, you know what, I don't have to commute. You know, I can be home with my family.
Right.
And but I know I'm friends with a lot of San Antonio firemen. I love them to death. But I knew now I know. Had I gone, I always believe, it's always on God's timing. He's never early, he's never late, he's always on time. And it's no's or no's, yeses or yeses. If he opens the door, go through it. If the door closes, leave it. And I knew that there was a reason that I didn't get on with San Antonio. Because now I have buddies that have left Houston to go to San Antonio, and they've always told me, like, hey, man, you have it good there. I know that the way we do things in Houston is different. We're a very old school, traditional department. We preach very aggressive tactics. Unfortunately, there's been a culture shift of making this job safer when this job is inherently unsafe.
Right.
A lot of, some departments out there, if you make more than three rooms involved, you're not going interior. If you go on the roof, you get reprimanded. There's departments in that area that are like that. And so some of my buddies that have left were like, hey, when you come to San Antonio, just be ready to slow down just a little bit. And he goes, they're not as, I don't want to use the word cowboys. Like, we're not cowboys out here.
Right.
We are aggressively smart.
Mm-hmm.
We like to, check all the boxes and, do our job. I always tell people, you just have to be here to experience it. You have to see it for yourself, and understand, where we're coming from. So, but no, San Antonio, didn't happen for a reason. And I'm kind of didn't, I'm in a great position now. I have a lot of respect for the guys out there. My hometown, I mean, some bad dudes out there, Manny Barajas, there's some bad dudes out there, man, that I have mad respect for, and, sometimes, man, like there's a page called Bridging the Gap. There's a bunch of just like Texas area firemen from municipalities, and you will throw shade at each other, but it's all clowning. It's all jokes. Cause at the end of the day, when you kind of get to know each other, you kind of realize, hey, we're all here for the same reason. We're here, for them, that's our job, and then we're here also to kind of critique each other in a professional manner. There's a million ways to skin a cat, and, you can learn something from everybody. I've worked for multiple departments. Let me say, I don't know why I got ahead of myself. So San Antonio, that's a drama story that I'm still bitter about,
but I do have a quick question. When you were traveling from San Antonio working to Houston, how far is that commute?
It's about a 3-hour drive. Okay. 3-hour drive. I can get there in about 2.5 hours.
Okay. Okay. And you were doing that for?
I did that commute for almost 5 years.
5 years. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So it was a lot. It was a lot. Cause I mean, there'll be days that, like, our station, we rotate, and you'll get off the ambulance, and sometimes I'll sleep in or drive home and I have to pull over and sleep, because it just got dangerous sometimes. So, like, you're just dog tired, but, I'm not the only, there's a lot of guys in the city of Houston that still live in San Antonio that still do the commute. I mean, we got a guy that flies in from Colorado.
Damn.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it, but he said it's cheaper to fly than, he had, I don't know the full story of that, but that he works at a station further downtown. He comes in from Colorado. The station that I rookied at, Firehouse 75, there's a guy that was on our opposite shift that he drove in from Florida, and he would ask me to relieve him early so he can drive home because he had an 8-hour drive home. And
that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's
it's wild.
Crazy, bro.
Yeah, it's wild. There's guys that come from, we got a couple of guys like on our shift or at our station. One guy comes from the Valley. It's like a four or 5.5 hour drive. He comes in, he drives in the night before. People from Laredo, Corpus Christi. I mean, it's because of the schedule. I mean, our schedule is, I think there's only two other departments that run our schedule. I believe it's Boston and Detroit. We do 24 on, 24 off, 24 on, and then we're off for 5 days. So we only work between 8 to 9 days a month, and every 31 days you have they call it debit day,
mm-hmm.
where you come back and you work on your sister shift. So I'm on the D shift. My sister shift is on the B shift. So I'll come every 31 days. I come back to work an extra shift. It's called a debit day, or we like to call them damn it days, because like we said, basically you're not getting paid for that day, but you are. I they've explained it to me numerous times, and I just don't care to learn. I'm just like, okay, I'm here. You
Right.
know, where do you need me? At least I know I'm not gonna be on the ambulance that day. On debit days, I don't put you on an ambulance. They're gonna put you on an apparatus. I'm like, all right.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, so.
All right. So let's kind of, all right. So you get all your credentials that you need to work for a municipality. So you get hired with Houston. You tried San Antonio. It didn't work out. So when you realized that Houston was it for you, your first assignment, what was it like to see how Houston operated? Was it surreal? Like tell us what, how, like your experience pretty much.
Yeah. So before Houston, I worked my very first fire job, and I'm gonna my ADHD is kicking in. The very first fire department I worked for was the it was an oil field fire department. I worked for this company called Emergency Site Protection. We did onshore and offshore oil field firefighting. Completely a different world. That was my very first experience, and not your typical fire department. This is all kind of safety, you know, reading, you know, hydrogen sulfide monitors and make sure nothing blows out. I did that for, you know, a couple of months, and then I got hired in San Antonio at the Toyota Motor Manufacturing Plant where they make the Tundras. They have their own fire department, and I got hired there. They call them ERTs, emergency response technician. It's a full-time fire department. They work 24/48. They got six guys on duty. And I did that for about 2 years. While I was there, I got hired with Bexar County District 2 Fire Department. And I was there as a reserve. From a reserve, I went part-time. Part-time went full-time. And I left Toyota to work for Bexar County District 2 Fire Department, which, I mean, now, I mean, they're a powerhouse department in the county. You have San Antonio Fire, and then you have Bexar County District 2 Fire Department. So I have mad respect for those guys. I mean, that's where, you know, I got my feet wet. That's where I got to learn, but it wasn't really giving me what I was looking for. I had, you know, you had a lot of young officers out there, you know, but it was just like we were busy, but not really what I thought was busy, like at the time. So moving forward, I get hired with Houston and hit the academy, and it was just a culture shock from the academy. Like the academy was like a different world, you know, just how many miles we run a day in the truck, but we're gonna run all of them, you know, how many towers we're gonna run, we're gonna run all of them, you know. And then they would literally kind of tell you in the academy, like, because we were a fast track class, so we have two different academies. We have a long track for non-certified, and then we have fast track for certified. So our class was nothing but certified guys that work for different departments. And they would basically tell us there, like, when you hit the streets after you graduate, you came from Val Yankee Training Facility. That's our academy. It's called the Val Yankee Training Center. It goes, we don't care what department you came from. Once you leave the tower, you tell people you came from the Houston Fire Academy. We don't care where. And some, because some of the guys out there were like, there ain't no other fire department but the Houston Fire Department, which I was like, let your egos go, man. I mean, there's a I've been fortunate to travel and go teach at other departments, and I see all kinds of stuff that's phenomenal, amazing. And I'm like, man, yeah, there is more than HFD. So I rookie at Fire Station 75 when I hit the streets, and that station's a is a is a medium busy station. Like my very first day there, we made like 21 runs on the engine, and that was like my first, like, what the hell? Like, this is, and they're like, yeah, I mean, this is it.
But I hate to stop you, but it's funny you mentioned, yeah, we're kind of a slow station, 21 runs. But anyways, I'm being facetious right now, bro. 21 runs. But anyways, go ahead.
So that was like a bad day. I guess I was a black cloud on my first day, because they're really that busy. They average like 12 to 15 runs. So they're, you know, they're not. And the biggest culture shock was that what I was looking for is that I wanted a salty officer. I wanted someone that was an old head. You know, I didn't have that at my other department. I had a kid that was younger than me that literally, like, I had more life experience than him. You know, he just, you know, he wasn't even old enough to drink yet, and he was my officer. And I'm like, okay, like, I'll respect the rank. you know, we'll learn together. And that's how it was. And then I get on with Houston, and you know, my very first senior captain, that dude, when I was born, he already had 15 years in the fire department. And he was super salty. And I remember he looked at me and he goes, "Rook, if you want to learn something, you're not going to learn from me." He goes, "That pipeman that's next to you, that's who you're going to learn from." He goes, "Because that's one that you're going to be doing all the work with." So I was like, "All right." And so my rookie year was, it was all right. I mean, it wasn't, I didn't really know Houston that much. I just knew that, okay, well, I'm here now. And that station's a good station. They don't have an ambulance, so that's a good thing. It's a truck house, and did my time there, and then ended up getting the opportunity about 2 years later to go to Fire Station 51. And that was, once I got there, it was one of those like, wow, like I'm here now. You know, if you understand the history of that district, you know, that station, you know, Southwest End Fire, May 31st, you know about, you know, all the brothers that passed away. I mean, there's a lot of everyone's really tight there. They hold a lot of pride, a lot of company pride. I mean, we call it embracing the brand. You know, we have all kinds of swag from our patches to some of us have dices on tattooed on us. You know, we embrace the brand because it's a we're in it together. But our station is arguably one or two in the top, you know, as far as being busy. You know, some days, some years we're number one in the city, some days we're number two. But you know, I let guys know that you come to our house, just know that get ready to get your teeth kicked in. No one's safe, whether you're on the ambulance, the engine, or the truck. I mean, that station is going to average between 60 to 70 runs a day, between three apparatuses. You know, you're guaranteed 20 to 25 on that ambulance. You're guaranteed 20 to 21 to some, the worst day on engine 51 was 32 runs on that engine. And then the ladder truck, we're averaging between 10 to 12 and up to 12 to 18, any given day, because we run an all hazard response. So once the ambulance is out, the engine's next up. When the engine's out, the truck's next up. So it's just a revolving door of making runs. And, but we have good officers. One of my biggest mentors is my senior captain, and you got to meet him one day. His name is Chris Kelly. I've known him for years, even before the Houston Fire Department. He works for a company on the side called Task Force One, where he trains, and he's real big on, you know, forceful entry, through the lock, truck work. He teaches an awesome truck academy, and I used to attend these classes before Houston. I mean, there's pictures of me in his class. And I remember about my fourth week into the fire academy with Houston, he was out there with his crew training, and he remembered me. He saw me and he goes, "Gutierrez." I'm like, "Yeah." He goes, "You finally made it." And I'm like, "Yes, sir." And that was it. And then he ends up promoting to senior captain, goes to 51s, and I go to 51s, and now I'm one of his senior mans on that truck. And you know, we get to do things together, and we're real good friends. I mean, he really challenges me. He really, it was this past year, he kind of told me to get out of my comfort zone. You know, a lot of times we do training, and I was real big on, I would just kind of sit back and like observe, because I guess sometimes I would be like, I don't want to like say something, or like, oh, they're gonna talk shit. You know, firemen are sometimes like, oh, you know, so I was like, mm-hmm. But periodically through trainings, you know, I may notice like maybe he didn't touch on a certain topic, and then I'd bring it up, or I'd bring up something, whether it's sprinklers related or whether it's rescue related. I have a rescue background, so I mean, it was going over ropes, and he would just look at me and he'd be like, "You sandbagging son of a bitch." He's like, you know a lot of stuff." He goes, "There's a lot of knowledge in that head, and I need you to speak up." And it was this past year we did our little employee, they're called EPIs, the employee performance, like they how you did for the year. And he really utilizes that senior man position. He goes, "Hey, you know, this year I need you to start speaking up and training, and, you know, shit rolls downhill. You know, if we have a rookie, you know, get on him, you know, learn with him, teach, grow." And kind of challenging me to to teach, and probably one of the greatest things that he's ever done, because it put me in a position to where I was like, okay, I do know this job. I'm confident. I have confidence in this. I can show you, but my biggest thing is explaining it, using the words to explain what we're doing. And we just got back from Buda, Texas last week. We did a truck academy out there for the Buda Fire Department. And I thought I was just going to go out there just kind of help. He said, hey, we're going to go out here and, you know, we're going to do a 3-day truck academy going over, you know, forcible entry, roof ops and all that. And I'm like, okay, cool. And day one, we go out there and he's doing the classwork. And then second half, we start going to the fire field. And he looks at me, he goes, Gutierrez, you're going to teach VES. And I'm like, he goes, I know you got it. So he just kind of threw me in the lines and he goes, here's your class. You're going to teach VES. You're going to teach search. You're going to do a little K-12 class, you know, cutting on some rebar, forcible entry. So I was kind of like, that was my first kind of like, okay, teaching outside instead of just kind of observing. And it was a blessing in disguise, because when you go out and teach places, you really don't know what other people know. So you kind of have to, like, you're always worried. Like me, I get in my head. I'm like, I'm worried about mm-hmm. what people are going to think, what people are going to say, because I don't want to, one, I'm humble, right? I don't forget where I came from. Two, I have a passion and a drive for this job. You know, I tell people that you got to love this job. I tell my rookie right now, you know, he doesn't know anything about the fire department. You know, he took the test and got hired, and I asked him, I'm like, how are you liking this job? He was like, I like it. I'm like, do you love this job? He's like, I was like, you need to figure that out. I was like, because I love this job. Like, I'm eating up. Like, this is what I've been doing for the past 16 years. I have a passion for this job. I don't want anyone to shit on this job. You know, I'm trying to, like I said, a couple of years back, you know, we kind of lost sight of that culture. People were kind of dogging people that want to train and want to do the extra work. They're like, oh, look at this guy. You, like I said, you get a lot of renters in the fire department, you know, not a lot of owners. And I, for one, was one of them at one time. You know, I had a, and we'll touch on that also. I had, you know, very mental health scare from 2017 to 2019. You know, PTSD is alive and well in the fire service, and I always tell people, talk about it. And from those years, it's kind of like a blip in my life. You know, I kind of lost who I was. And but then it was the community of the fire service that kind of brought me back, you know, to ground and realize, like, okay, this is where we're a family, and this is what we're here together. You know, I was telling people, talk about it. You know, you go through stuff, talk about it. You know, you see something that you're not supposed to see, talk about it. It ain't normal,
right?
It ain't normal to see the stuff that we see. And I defend my department or any other department. I'm not going to talk down on a lot of departments, because I used to be, you know, I started, like, for one, like, I'll be, you know, I'm going to be 100% honest. At one time, I used to be that guy. You know, I see guys that, you know, at, you know, we go take civil service tests, and you have these guys showing up with their fire department shirts on and their pagers. And, you know, I'd be one, like, to poke fun, right? But then I sit back and I'm like, it was my wife. My wife's the one that told me. She's like, don't forget where you came from. She goes, I remember that you were that kid. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife was, I remember we was 19 years old. And my wife now, I had a baby mama for my oldest daughter. And then I got my wife. Me and my wife were dating, and she was pregnant. And we were shopping at a Trader's Village in San Antonio. And we saw I saw a column of smoke. And it was in my territory, my volunteer department. And I'm like, she looked at me. She's like, you want to go to that, don't you? I'm like, yeah, let's go. And in a little, like, no AC Honda Accord, 1980 Accord, and had a little light bar on it, and freaking just driving over there. And sure enough, it was this big old brush fire. And she's like 5 months pregnant with my kid. And I just park on the side of the road, and I put my little volley hat on, and freaking jump in one of the back of the brush trucks. I'm like, all right. And there I am with, like, I had brand new Air Force Ones on, and I was like, I was still worried about getting them dirty. I got them filthy, like, but I was having the time of my life.
Right.
And my wife always brings that story up. She's like, don't ever forget that that's who you were at one time. You know, that's all I knew, you know, it was, but then a lot of guys, they, they lose sight of that. And sometimes they get hired with these big departments, and they develop this chip on their shoulder that they just think that they're bigger than themselves, man. They think that they're just, you know, legends in their own minds, you know, God's gift to the fire service, all that. No, you know, this job will humble you real fast, you know, and it's one of those things that you have to have the right people around you. You got to surround yourself with like-minded individuals to bring you down to ground, kind of like, hey, you know what, you know, you don't know it all, mm-hmm. you know, job, you know, you can never train too hard for a job that can kill you. That's mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest things that we have, like, preaching our academy. At the academy, we have a Connex box that says that, you know, you can't train too hard for a job that'll kill you. And sometimes if people read it, oh, it's like, it's just words. But if you really sit there and kind of dissect that saying, it's powerful. You know, this job, you know, a bad day, you know, you've always heard it, you know, a bad day for us means that you almost come home, you know. And that's sometimes that's a hard pill to swallow, but it's a life that a lot of us have chosen, and we love it. You know, I do it again over and over and over again. I mean, I've had a lot of close calls, and my wife thinks I'm crazy because I'm like, would I do it again? Absolutely. I go 10 out of 10 recommend. You know, it's one of those, you have to, firemen are different. We're a different breed. You know, we understand each other. You know, we're connected in a certain way that no one else will ever understand.
Right.
And like me talking to you, man, sometimes, like, I'm still like talking to you. I'm still like, I can't believe I'm talking to Danny B right now.
You know? No, man, it's so before we kind of, I mean, I love it. I love hearing you talk. I love letting the guests go, because as I say, it may be a show I created, but this is your platform. This is time for you to talk and spread the good word. But what I will let the listeners know, 2024 run stats for Station 51, Ladder 51, 177 working structure fires that they went to. The engine 51, 192 fires. And the battalion that oversees their station, and how many stations does the battalion cover?
So the battalion, so as you battalion, we say district, but the
okay,
battalion,
district, okay.
But I'll, you know, so yeah, so the district or the battalion, so I work at Fire Station 51, which is in District 68 or Battalion 68. So that battalion oversees four stations, which is Firehouse 68, Firehouse 51, Firehouse 73, and Firehouse 82. That's just in that, but that doesn't mean that they're always going to make that. So, like, I work, Fire Station 51 is in the heart of the Southwest Side. It's right in the hood, the Gulfton Ghetto. It's Sharpstown. It's hood. But we are right in the middle between two different districts. To the left of us, we have District 28. And then to the right of us, we have District 83. And then in front of us, we have District 68. So we are literally, we get hit on, the reason why we make majority of fires is because you can pull us either way. We're going to go left, right. We're going to go right forward. You know, we're going to make, and especially if you're on a truck, the truck's going to get utilized a lot.
Okay.
You know, especially, you know, if you have a truck that's worth the shit, you know, if you have a crew that's worth the shit and the chiefs know you, they're going to use you. There's times where we've gotten put in on fires that we don't even belong on, but the chief would rather have us there than have some other crew out there that, hey, have Ladder 51 roll in, you know, we had a chief one time. He's not in the department anymore, but he worked at District 83, and one of their stations was on an apartment fire, and we got hit on a tap. Like, hey, they put Engine 51 and Ladder 51 on it. And that chief on the radio says, I'm not gonna throw the name of the station, but they go, you know, Engine so and so and Ladder so and so, get out. Engine 51's here to put your fire out. And it was like, we're like, holy shit, did he say that? Like, we're like, all right. So, and we're about it, you know, all right, cool, you know. Now, and then our captain looked at us, goes, hey, you heard what chief said on the radio? He goes, yeah. He goes, now we better prove, because if we go out there and we don't perform.
Right.
He just put the spotlight on us, so we better go perform. And sure enough, we did. We performed and, you know, knocked it out. And some guys that are not part of our station don't really like, because they think we're like squirrels, but we're really not, man. I tell guys, like, all are welcome, man. You want to come to our station? Come over, man. It speaks volumes. Anytime, because we have a very traditional culture out there, so. If you're going to put in for a busy station, a lot of times they want you to be from that district. They want, if you rookie there or whatnot, you know, if not, it's kind of like they don't want you, or that you can put in for it, but they're going to make it hell for a year. They're going to try and get you to transfer out. Us, it's different, at least on our shift. If we have some guy that has 5, 6 years in and wants to put in for our station, we're like, come on, dude. Like, you're more than welcome. That shows us that you want to come learn. You want to come and be a part of something great. It really is. You know, that's our end. Hey, you want to come and learn? You want to, you know, we're more than happy to come over here. You get some guys that show up, they do the year and leave. They just want the t-shirt, say, hey, we were there, and they go elsewhere. When I got on with Houston, it was hard to get 51s. Like, so talk about Houston Fire Department, but really the main stations are on the southwest side. You have 68s, 28s, and you have District 68, District 28, you know, which has, you know, all the busy houses, and then you have 10s and all that. Then you have, you know, 46s, 35s, you have 31s, 34s, 8s where Clyde Davis is at. I mean, Clyde Gordon, sorry. But so there's, you have a couple of hot houses throughout the whole city, but men lie, women lie, numbers don't. If you look at the numbers, we tell people, look at the numbers on Stats and Fires, where are they happening at? It's in the southwest side. I mean, yeah, we're Sheetrock Warriors, but, you know, we're still making burners, you know, at least once a tour. You know, we're making something good. We'll have our spurts where we'll go, you know, 3, 4 months without a fire. And then before you know it, it's knocking us. Like that day that I sent you, like, that my week's worth of jobs, it was one of those. Let me send this to Danny. Let me show him. Like, but it's not like that all the time, but it feels like it. You know, we make a lot of EMS. That's just part of the fire service. Our captains always tell us you got to pay to play. You know, the price of working at a station that makes a lot of fires is a lot of EMS.
Yep. I've said that plenty of times on other episodes. Yes. Yep.
I was like, you gotta pay to play. That's just part of the game, you know, and you gotta be, you know, aggressive in everything. Like, it's aggressive just doesn't fall into in the fire, you know, at a fire. It's the way you carry yourself, it's your mannerisms, you know, it's the way you conduct yourself, you know, around, you know, the citizens, around the community, you know, it's just a different mindset. Yeah, man, you gotta come down here one day, man. And
oh no, trust me, the invitation has been offered, and yes, I will make my way down to Houston, down to Texas in general. So many people I have to meet. It's not even funny. But I didn't get to finish this part. The district chief, 255 fires. So that just goes to show you the amount of jobs, a true job town for sure. That a lot of people don't know, goes unnoticed unless you know the Houston area.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic, man. Let's talk about one of the important topics was the senior man. To me, that is a depending on where you're at, it can be a position that gets lost in the weeds. But I want you to talk about how important a senior man needs to be for the crew.
Man, so the senior man, and I'm still learning this as I go, because it's I'm not quite there yet. So we have our main senior guy right now, Kyle Collins. He's getting ready to promote. You know, he's been there longer than I have. But me and him kind of, we're the yin and the yang, you know, good cop, bad cop. You know, I'm more of the class clown, more of the if I need to kind of put my foot down, I will, but I kind of try not to. He's more of he's real serious about things. He's not timid. I won't ever say that. He's just very, very professional. I mean, he has a degree in like politics and something. Like, he used to be a mayor for somewhere in New Jersey.
Okay.
But nicest guy in the world, you know, like, he will not hurt anyone's feelings. Like, he's me, I'll hurt someone's feelings. But he's teaching me, you know, there's a lot of steps as far as being a senior man, when it comes to like mentoring, overall operational, like, side in the station. You know, our captains are big on, don't let me have to be a captain. You know, they don't micromanage. They're like, hey, if we have to step in and be a captain, y'all are slipping up and doing something. Make sure that, you know, everyone's squared away. It's having that ownership of that station. Hey, this is our house. We're going to take pride in this house. You know, making sure that everyone's squared away, even with little stuff, whether it's training, whether it's, you know, your CEs, or whether it's like even just going out there and holding each other accountable on, hey, you know what? The truck looks like shit. You know, let's go fix that up. Hey, you know, the hoses look like garbage, or the saws look like trash. You know, we're going to go out there and maintaining that pride, you know, within the station, and keeping that like professionalism throughout your shift, and really being that person to lean on. If, you know, someone has a question, you know, hey, I don't know this, you know, we have a lot of younger guys at our station. And again, I don't realize how much I know until someone else asks me a question. I'm like, oh, like what's second nature to me is not second nature to them. I'm like, okay, well, oh, you don't know it. So let's go and let's figure this out together. My biggest thing is we tell our rookies, hey, if you don't know something, what do you say? You say, no, I don't know, but I'll find out. Simple as that. If I don't know it and you don't know it, hey, we're going to learn together. You know, it's not, I had a very bad experience with my first senior pipeman. You know, he basically, I was his bitch. Like, basically, hey, you go do the dishes, mm-hmm. you know, go make the coffee. You know, you're going to do all the records, like just pointing his fingers, but never really engaging us. If you're going to do it, we're going to do it with you. You know, we're a family. My biggest thing is if you leave that shift and not looking forward to coming back the next day, then I failed you. I want you to be motivated to come back and excited, because we're excited to have you. We want you to be happy coming in here. And it's keeping that sense of urgency with them. It's keeping that sense of pride, you know, having them wanting to come back, being excited, keeping that motivation there. You know, the senior man is a real big deal on the motivational aspect of the station. You know, the being that leader, you know, that non-ranked leader. You know, you have your lieutenant, you know, we don't have lieutenants, we have captains and senior captains, but you're kind of that role model for them to want to be, you know, hey, I want to learn. And being that person to kind of give advice. You know, we have one of our other firemen, you know, she's learning how to empathize with other firemen. You know, she's a red ass. Like, she's like, if you piss her off, like, she'll hurt your feelings. Like, she's one of those, like, did he call me retarded? No, she asked if you're retarded. Like, it's one of those, like, it's, she's real. you don't want to piss her off, but she just doesn't. She's starting to understand, hey, you know what, like, you have to understand people's backgrounds. You don't know what their lives were before here. So,
right.
You know, we're not like a lot of us. We're all type, you know, we have that type A personality. You know, if someone that comes that's not like that, you're going to notice, they're going to stick out. And it's kind of like, hey, how come you're not like us? Well, you don't know them. Like, we're going to let's figure this out. And she's learning as far as like the leadership aspect. And I'm very fortunate to, you know, be there to kind of like, we talk and all that, and she's like, she's getting it now. She's like, okay. And sometimes I'll see her, like, if the rookie does something that, because sometimes with our rookies, man, it's like Groundhog's Day. We'll teach them something, and the next day it's like, where did it go?
Right.
All right, let's do it again. And sometimes it's frustrating, but the last thing you want to do is belittle that person. You want to be like, okay, if you're not clicking, let's figure out something that works. So if, you know, being, you know, pointing the finger at you and yelling at you is not working, let's change our approach and let's see how that works. And she's learning that now. And I've seen it. I mean, one day I saw her, she was super like nice. I was like, man, that scared me. And, but you know, it's one of those, like, kind of seeing things on the outside, kind of observing and kind of putting yourself in certain places that, you know, that where you can fit, where you can find the need. But kind of being that go-to guy, because we do a thing, you know, it's, if you can't settle it in the station, you know, we don't ever want to get outside of the station. So if a pipeman has another issue with the pipeman, then we do what they call a silver badge meeting. You know, hey, we're going to go to the watch office. All the silver badges are going to go in there and we're going to talk. You know, we're all going to figure out, hash it out. If there's any issues, get it resolved before it has to go up to another rank. So our engineer operator will go in there. Same thing, you know, goes to him. If that doesn't fix it, goes to our captain. If that doesn't fix it, goes to the senior captain. But usually it never goes that far. Mm-hmm. At the silver badge meeting, you know, we're gonna resolve, you know, whatever world's problems we have right then and there. Because you know how it is. You know, we live with each other half our lives. So
right.
Things are gonna get heated, man. We're a big dysfunctional family of misfits. And but it's all love at the end of the day. You know, right. We never want to, you know, do anything with malicious intent. You know, we want to just kind of be there for each other. And, you know, because that at the end of the day, like, that's all we have. You know, if you know, yeah, we can be arguing right now. But when that booper goes off and, you know, we got a ripper and God forbid there's a mating situation, I need to know that I have you.
Exactly.
And vice versa. Like, all egos and pride aside, at the end of the day, we need each other. Believe it or not, we do need each other. So we need to figure this out. Because we have to learn to get along.
You're right. You're right, man. 100% right. And it's one thing I can never understand. Like, I mean, like you stated, you know, it's good to have jabs here. Like, a station boasts about being good. But if they're good, they're good. Like, I will be 100% man enough to admit that. You know what I mean? Like, give a crew or give a station that actually does a good job their flowers. Like, tell them, hell, you did an awesome job. Like, this morning, that fire we had this morning, the next in engine, their engineer, he helped me out tremendously because I had a lot going on. I'm pumping a fire with only 300 gallons. We're trying to get a water supply. I got a line down. I got heavy flames showing. I got a lady over there going, there's three people in there. And I'm like, okay, like, got it. Like, I'm trying to balance stuff and priorities. And so, you know, I've always said this, man. I am humble enough. I have grown so much that I am humble enough to say when it was time to do some aerial ops, my captain was like, hey, charge. Him and my engineer were in the bucket. They're like, hey, charge the deck on the bucket. Man, I had a momentary lapse of a brain fart where I looked at the pump panel and I'm like, where the fuck is the damn knob for this? Like, I literally had to sit there and then it kicked in. It was like dilute because in my mind, I'm either looking for because our trucks are kind of different. Like, most of the time, you know, you're looking for a lever or a button, but it never clicked until it finally did. It's a turn wheel for the deluge gun. And mm-hmm. I saw it, and I'm like, all right, bet. Like, there it is. You have a momentary lapse of judgment when things are chaotic around you. But he tremendously, man, he hooked up my water supply. He's like, hey, man, you good? He was like, hey, he was a sex set of eyes. He's like, hey, you're kind of getting below your residual. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I'm not really test taking right now. This is like, I'm going to roll the dice on this. So we got stuff going on. I'm going to go below my residual, but it got to a point where it was too low for sure, but it was great having that second set of eyes that, you know, the hand, the help. So, and you know, that crew, and I'm going to be honest, you know, that crew, they get a lot of shit, but they are jam up. When it comes to firefighting, I would do anything that captain told me. I would do anything that engineer told me. Like, they train their guys to be good at engine work. Some people might not like it, but they are fucking good. Like, I give them the credit that's deserved. And I wish we would do more of that instead of beating each other down.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's I 100% agree with that. I mean, you know, we have to, you know, my biggest, you know, you want to, what's that saying? Praise in public, but critique in private. Like, you want to,
right?
If they're doing good, hey, give them, you know, give them that clout. Let them know that, hey, you know what you did.
Absolutely,
you did with, like, and that's one thing that, you know, especially with our rookie, you know, what I'm learning with, especially with him, is if I know he can do something, instead of me, if, like, let's say we do like a dress out, you know, a little dress rehearsal. And he's not getting his gear under time, right? And he beats himself up about it. You know, what doesn't work is like, what the hell? You know, you can't get you like just mm-hmm. knocking the whole time. But then I've seen him do it before. So what works, like, tell him, hey, man, look, you can do it. I've seen you do it. Just, it, nothing changes. Just whatever you did that last time, the same repetition, I know you can do it. Once you have that kind of positive reinforcement, his attitude changes and he lights up like, oh, yeah, you're right. I can do it. You know, or we go out and, you know, we go drill, we go throw some lines in the ground and flow water. And I mean, this kid one time, man, he's from Baltimore. and he's not used to this Texas heat. And we're not even in the middle of August yet. And you and I been training, pulling lines, and he was pale, blue in the lips. I'm like, this kid's about to pass out. And I'm kind of like, and he's pulling that line. I'm like, hey, man, keep pushing, man. Keep pushing. Come on. I'm like, I know you can do it. Like, don't give up on yourself. And sure enough, man, like, he didn't. You know, he was like, he pushed through it and got through the training scenario and was like ready for more. You know, he was like, okay. So I'm like, see, I go, what you did there, that's what we need every single day. Because he hadn't made a fire with us at that time yet. So he didn't understand the high octane speed that we need on the fire ground. Because I tell him, man, sometimes the reason why we ask 2 minutes or less is because a lot of times we're first in, we're literally right down the street. This bitch is burning, like literally right next door to us. You better have your shit on quick because we will leave you. You know, I've noticed that it's I know you guys like to mask up at the door. You know, us, we don't do that. We, man, you'll get yelled at by a chief if you do that. We step off the rig ready to rock. Like, our biggest thing is, hey, we're going to step off the rig, masked up, ready to go. We don't sit at the door and put our mask on. Like, but that's all I know. Like, I've noticed a lot of departments are going to that. Ever since I got into the fire service, we've never done the mask up at the door. And so we always tell the rig, like, hey, when you step off that rig, you're ready to rock, man. You got everything on, ready to go, you know, and we're ready to put in some work, you know. So, and that's what it's all about, man. It goes going back to that aggressive culture. I don't know if you're gonna ask me that question, but I was prepared.
No, go ahead. Roll with it. Keep going.
So. Aggressiveness, Clyde Gordon said it best when he said, it's doing the job right, right? My takeaway from that is aggressiveness is a tactical mindset put into action. It is doing the job, like I said, the right way. It's not reckless. It is checking off all the boxes. You know, once you step off that rig and you're ready to go, at the end of that fire, you can at least have that satisfaction of knowing, hey, I checked every single box off. I did my job. You know, regardless of the outcome, you know that you did what you're supposed to do in that aggressive manner, being fast on your feet. People say, don't run on the fire ground. No, you're going to put a little pep in your step because if you're fucking, well, you're going to want to make sure that you're with the purpose. You know, our captains are big on a 2-bottle minimum. Hey, you're going to work hard for 2 bottles and then we're going to rehab. You know, or I was always taught, always outwork your captain. Always don't let, you know, you wait till he taps out. And it's still like that till this day. Like, when my senior captain's on his CrossFit high and we're making fires, I'm there praying to God that he's tapping out. Cause I'm like, dude, hurry up and tap out. Cause if not, like, I'm going to kick you in the nuts and we're going to go out together. Cause like, I'm dying right now. But, you know, it's that, we have that common ground, you know, hey, you know what, we're going to go in, you know, we're very, if you've seen videos of us, we are a very interior heavy department.
Okay.
We're very old school. We don't fight fire from the outside. We don't really reset. You know, we're real big on fighting fire from the inside out. Heavy on ops. Heavy on roof ops. I'm a truck guy. You know, pumper works cool, but I love the truck. I love the big ass toolbox. You know, that's just my thing. You know, the truck work is work. You know, I was my senior was telling me, what do you tell people what truck work is? Truck work is work. You know, it's there's a lot of moving parts on that thing, and you got to be sure that you're proficient in every single piece of equipment that's on that toolbox. You know, there's two different operations in the fire service. What does the engine do? The engine fights the fire. What does the truck do? The truck fights the conditions. You know, it's simple as that. You know, you're the angels in the sky when the pumper crew's in there getting their ass beat. And you cut that hole, and I don't know if you've ever been on a hose line when a truck crew is popping that top and you can feel the temperature change. You're like, okay, now you got visibility. You have that comfort. You know, it's one of those, you know, like, you know, I love being that guy up there, or sometimes I love being that truck guy that will steal a nozzle from an engine guy. You know, that's a fun part. Like, hey, give me that nozzle. And, but yeah, man, truck work, man, is a passion of mine. I mean, I'm been fortunate to teach a class on it, and I didn't realize how much I really knew about it until I challenged myself. And like this class we did out in Butte, Texas, man, be on the lookout for those guys. Those guys got it dialed in. They just got a brand new platform. Thing is beautiful, and they're going to have a full truck staff. And they reached out to us to teach them a truck academy. And these guys are, I mean, you got guys that have been there 15, 16, 20 years. And we were there to kind of be that those people to kind of teach them. And it was funny because I had a couple of weeks prior, I have a lot of mentors. Howard Reinwald, you know who he is. I actually live in his territory where his fire department services. So I got East County Fire Department. They cover, they protect our neighborhood. So I'm good friends with him. Obviously Dell Jenkins, legend. And then also my senior captain, James Denny. I know you had the privilege. That's my guy, chairman. That's my boy. We me and him go way back. Actually, he was the very first person to, because he does leather work, and my very leather helmet strap he made me years ago. And I've been through numerous leathers, and that's the only leather strap that has held up between anyone else. I don't know what they do out there on the border, but that border leather is completely different from any other leather I've worked with. But yeah, that's my boy. And I can kind of, I have a story on him, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. But I like to, if I want to learn something, my biggest thing is I'm going to talk to people that have done it before me. And I ask them, you know, how do I obtain that knowledge? What do I got to do to get there? I respect guys that go out there and teach, these cadres that are out there, you know, I respect it, because it takes a lot to stand there and talk, you know, and have people listen and have that mindset. Okay, well, if they don't want to listen to me, whatever, I'm just going to block them off. You know, haters going to hate. You know, I'm going to teach the people that want to learn. People that are going to be there, hey, cool. Like I said, we're here for the owners, not the renters. If you're going to sit there and talk shit, I got no business talking to you. I got no business wasting my time, you know. And so I spoke with, you know, Dell, for instance, Jenkins, and kind of asked him about, you know, I mean, obviously this dude's been doing it since the dinosaur age. And
Right.
You know, and got some good advice from him. And well, we teach this class out there in Buda, and again, I say this humbly, I'm not trying to toot my own horn. One of the officers had came up to me and was talking to me, and he goes, "Hey man, I have a quick question." I'm like, "Yeah." And he literally word for word, "How do I obtain the knowledge that you have?" And I was blown away. I was like, "Man, buddy," I was like, "I'm just a fireman, dude." I was like, I'm just here just by what I know is just based off exposure, based off what we see on a day-to-day basis. A lot of stuff that we see on our shift is not normal to other people. I mean, we make copious amounts of calls, fires, and everything, and you really don't know what you know until you go out and teach to somebody that doesn't know it.
Right.
And they look at it, and they're like, "Wow." And I'm like, "Man, y'all didn't know this." But of course, I'm not going to say it like that. I'm like, "Okay, well, hey, you don't know it." Like, then now I'm excited to show you. Hey, you know what? Let me show you. It's like seeing a brand new car. It's like, "Hey man, let me show you how to do this. Let me show you this new search technique. I mean, it may not be new to me, but it's new to you, but we're going to do it together." And, it's a great feeling to be there, you know, to kind of be that mentor. And I, like I said, I'm loving it every step of the way.
No, that's, I think it's very important to have mentors, not just one. Definitely, to me, it's a plus if you have more than one, because it's always good that where you can tap in on different people's perspectives. And it's also better when they all have different particular skills that you could put together. So if you got someone that's really good on the engine, hey, I got a question about this. Someone's good on the truck. Someone's good on the rescue. To me, I have mentors too. And if I mention them, you know, they'll probably be like, "Well, why me?" And it's like, well, number one, you've been doing it for so long. You have your reputation speaks, you know, especially in the fire service, man, you know, like I'm sure, you know, with whatever program y'all use to show you who's going to be on your truck that day, you know who you want to work with and who you don't want to work with. And to me, it's very important that people understand your last name is all you have. Do not shit on that. Like, make sure people know you care for the job. Now, granted, your care might be more than others, but at least people need to know that they can at least count on you and that you at least give a damn. That's for me. Like, you may not like me as a person, but I hope that my performance, how I show up to work every day, somebody can never go, oh, that guy was never worth a shit. Like, not that I do not want that for myself. So I totally 100% get what you're saying.
Oh yeah, you know, you want to, you know, there's two terms you use in the fire service, and you want to be you don't want to be jam up, you don't want to be a slug. And the last thing I want to be known is it was, hey, this dude was a fucking slug, or he was a load. You know, I don't ever want to be that person. I want to be that person that, hey, you know what, he's jam up, he's squared away, this guy knows what he's doing, you know, and I want to be in that position versus having to go somewhere and like they've shit on you for so many years, and you're like, okay, like you just kind of accept it and learn to kind of that attitude.
Right. 100%, man. 100%. Well, you kind of already hit on that. So you said you're definitely a truck guy, which is fine. And I know a lot of banter goes back and forth. You know, you hear a lot of engine guys call the truckies, like, you know, damn, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out the damn name. But they always give us hell for being on the roof, or we can't add more than whatever the case would be. The banter is awesome. I can say personally, being on an engine for so long, switching over to the truck is a lot of work. It is not easy. If you are an individual who thinks, all right, I want to get off this engine and get on a ladder that won't do as much work or doesn't run a lot of calls, when you do run those calls, your functions as a ladder company is a lot, man. Like, you know, I had to teach myself. I had to build up my strength more because we have a 28-foot ladder. We got 235s. And granted, I know my training chief is listening. He's going to listen to this. So I'll kind of say, yes, we usually ride. We normally, our crew, we ride three. Sometimes we have four. But I am a firm believer that I do not feel like certain things I need to have a second person with me. So I train myself to pull that 35 by myself. And of course I see it all the time. You see these keyboard warriors like, oh, that's a great way to get hurt. Okay. Am I going to tell the family where if we pull over to the seaside of the structure and there's someone hanging out, hey, I've never thrown that 35 by myself. We always have two people. Just give us a minute. I'll get it to you. My mindset is I'm going to do with what I have to do. Like, less is more is less, whatever the case may be. So I am a firm believer, man. Like, I will throw a 35, not shoulder throw it. I've tried that. Didn't work for me very well, but I'll use a structure to my advantage, leverage points, getting that up there. Truck work is true truck. It is difficult. It is hard. It is definitely not easy.
Oh yeah, it really is. I mean, it's you like engine work, man. You know, you go show up to a fire, pull a line, go in, fight some fire, come out, rehab. Truck work, you get there, what's your first assignment? Hey, you're gonna go cut a roof. Go up there, cut a hole. Okay, that's done. Come back down. What do you need? Okay, we gotta go do a primary. Okay, primary's done. Now what? Hey, let's go throw some ladders. Throw some ladders. Okay, now let's go check for extension. Let's go pull ceiling. Let's go overhaul. And before you know, you're like, fuck, man, you're gassed out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, all right. And while, you know, while you're doing that, the engine crew's over there just chilling, just, you know, waiting for like, okay, once the truck guys are done, you know, we'll go in there and kind of hit some hot spots, or we'll end up grabbing the nozzle and, hey, we're here, so we'll just hit the hot spots while we're here.
Right.
Yeah. It is a lot of work, and it's just different, you know, especially like vehicle extrications to, you know, Stokes basket rescues to, I mean, all that. I mean, there's numerous, you know, operations on that truck that you have to learn and you have to be proficient in, from even as small as like airbags and, you know, knowing all your tools and throwing ladders. That's a bitch. I mean, that's one thing that we still train on. I mean, and the thing is that like, we have those Alco not so light ladders.
Uh-huh. Damn. That's true work right there.
Got the duo safeties, which I wish. And then we have a 50-foot banger ladder on our truck. So that has little steep poles that come out, and
that takes
like six people. We're never going to deploy that. I mean, that thing, I don't know why it's there, but we have it. But yeah, I know we have all the 28s, 35s, our 50-foot banger, you know, all our 20-foot straight roof ladder, you know, that's a bitch to throw on its own. I mean, mm-hmm.
It's awkward. Yes, it is. And that, dude, I'm telling you, man. And what I like to do, and I don't mean to cut you off, but whenever we have like new people come in and they come to our station or they rotate, it's like, hey, I'm going to show you the ladder compartment. All right. Can you throw the 16? Sure. Watch them throw it. They're like, oh, easy. I'd be like, yeah, 20 next. Oh, 20. I got it. The thing with the 20, like you mentioned, it's so long that when you try to get to where you can just throw it, like you're off kilter a lot. So there's a technique, and I always watch, and I will say most of the time they don't get it the first time. And I'm like, did you underestimate that? Because it's just an extra 4 feet, but you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, we were trying on that the other day, and we're like throwing 16 like nothing, and then we grabbed the 20. Oh, okay, cool. And all of us were getting our ass whooped on that thing. We're like, dude, that extra 4 feet makes a big difference when throwing it. They're sliding under you, or you can't get it, just to stick correctly. And same thing, once you get it up, you feel like it's gonna tilt on you. You gotta jerk it another way, and it's a bitch. Like I'd rather throw, a 24-foot extension ladder than I would throw a 20, So yeah, it's a or even a 28. I mean, it's different. And I'm glad you kind of see. I thought we were going crazy, but now that you kind of agree to me about those 20s, those are just completely.
Dude, I'm
It's awesome.
telling you, it throws people off. They see 20 and they're like, well, did the 16 just fine? Now that 20, it threw me for a loop when I couldn't get it. And I'm like, what's the deal? So I started looking at it and I figured out a technique where I can get it. I don't need grass to get it. I can do it on concrete. I don't want to say I perfected, but I've gotten pretty damn good at throwing it on concrete where it won't slide on me. But I always look at that like that is the curveball right there. That freaking 20. It is. It is crazy. But man, that's crazy to know that you guys don't have dual safeties. So you use like two alpha lights.
Yeah, and that's terrible, man. Like, so we went to go train over there. They have dual safeties, and I was telling the guys, this is the ladders I'm talking about. Like, this is what we need. But we got these freaking 1,000-pound ladders, and like, it's terrible. It beats your ass because like they'll see videos like, oh, look at this guy throwing this 35 like nothing. I'm like, that's probably a dual safety he's throwing. He ain't throwing an alkalite. There ain't no way.
No. I mean, if somebody can throw it, man, my gosh, you're a beast. Because I mean, the duo safety is still heavy at 35, but a true alkali 35, holy moly.
Yeah, and that's all they have
That's
throughout the city. I think there's only a couple of stations that have the dual safety. We have nothing but alkalites out here. Yeah, so that's everything's heavy over here.
All right. Let's kind of hit on training, man. I know you said training was big. To me, training is the foundation. Like you can't be a successful fireman if you don't train. Like you have to train. There is no secret formula way around it. It's the only way to get better in this job.
It's the only way to perfect it. And you'll never perfect a craft. I would typically,
Correct.
everyone's training to, you're like I said, like name yourself a student of the game. You have to consistently be a student of this game and continue to learn and be a sponge and absorb everything that's coming at you, because you can never learn everything. There's always something that you can nitpick and figure out, okay, I don't know this. Now let's figure this out. It's a training is a big part of the fire service. For us, for instance, our rookies, we're real big on quality of training versus quantity of training. Some stations are going to drill you all day on different things till you're dog ass tired. Us, we're going to pick a topic and we're going to train on it for a good hour and a half, quality, so you can absorb and really learn it. We do a our rookies we do a tool proficiency for all our rookies. Every time we get a rookie, well, sign first day of the tour. Hey, here are the irons. Okay, you got 2 tours to learn about this, and then you're going to teach a class, and they're going to teach a class on everything about the irons. And then next class, hey, New York hook. You're going to teach a class on New York hook. Next class, chainsaws. Next class, until you've done every tool on that apparatus, because it's going to help you be more proficient and understand what these tools can do, capabilities, things that you can do. Other than there's multiple uses for every single tool that's out there. It's not just for one job. But training is extremely important, because that's the only way you're gonna figure out your weak points, where you can, okay, I gotta work on this, or I gotta work like that 20, that's sticking to 20, that's one of those like, okay, now I know where my weak points are at. Now I know where I need to train on. Even as simple as like train, like simple stuff, like training on like starting a saw, troubleshooting, if your saw, bogs down on you, or if it fails in the roof, like how to troubleshoot, how to fix it. Simple stuff like that critiquing the minor things, because a little goes a long way. You can train on little things, but throughout the duration of your career, you can perfect it. You can train hard enough to where you don't, it's like what they say, train till you don't train till you get it right, train till you can't get it wrong.
Right.
Get very proficient in that training aspect, get that and get your mind ready for that. Like, hey, you know what? Like, we got to train because we got to know this. We got to know this because this is part of our job, and like I said, this job, if you don't, if you mess up on something, it could possibly cost your life an injury or something. You have to make sure that you're taking the time and investing that sweat equity out there to be proficient and to want to learn more as you move forward in this career.
Absolutely. No, absolutely correct. And I couldn't have said it any better, man. I could not have said it any better. That's perfect. You kind of hit on the love for the job. And I like how you mentioned earlier, with your rookie, you asked him, hey man, so in you said you mentioned he is not from the fire service realm. He is new into the service. And you asked him the question of how are you liking it? And he was kind of like, yeah, I like it. But you're like, well, that's something you need to figure out. I think we are having that issue where, granted, some people who've never been in the fire service, they come into it and yes, they end up loving what they do. But what do you say? Well, actually, I like how you said it because it makes that person think. But what would you say to an individual who just, they don't love it, they're not into it, they're just there?
It's kind of a loaded question. So when someone's not there, and it's funny because I literally just experienced this, if they're just filling the void or treating this as a job, I look at it as your liability. I was like, you don't have you we're not mentally connected together. We you don't have the same mindset I have, as a lot of guys in our department have. If you're just here treating it just as a job, it becomes an issue because it's all it shows me is that you're not willing to find that passion. You're just here to collect a paycheck and leave. Some guys, oh, I'm not here to make friends, I'm here to collect a paycheck and leave. Not like fuck that bullshit. You can go work, 9 to 5 somewhere else. This is a firehouse. This is our home. This is a life. This is a brotherhood. This is a sisterhood. People have died before us doing this job. I love this job and I'm eating up about it. I that's all I know. This is 16 years of my life. I love everything about it. And just like when I had told our rookie, do you like this job? He goes, yeah. I go, do you love it? And he was like, I don't know yet. And I go, you need to figure that out. I go, because I love this job. And not everyone around us loves the job. You can tell the difference between someone that loves this job and someone that just treats it as a job. Because this is, this sounds so cliche, but this is not a job. This is a way of life. You hold yourself accountable inside and outside of the fire station. Hell, I treat my house like a fire station, man. We do 9 o'clock cleanup at night with the kids. My youngest daughter, she's a rookie of the house. We role play all kinds of stuff throughout the house. And, but when you're just filling that spot and you're not all there, I have to really question you, like, is this something that you really want to do for the rest of your life?
Right.
Because a lot of times, you don't know. So that's some of the ones that say that they really haven't had life experiences. They really don't know what this job entails until it hits them in the back of the head and they realize that they saw something that they didn't want to see, they had to smell something or they had to go through something that, no one should go through. And now they're like, okay, well, see, now you understand why we love this job, versus, this is, again, this is not just a job. I always tell my kids that we see life behind the curtain. Our world is not the same world as their world. The innocence that they see is not the innocence we see. We see the world behind the curtain. We see the real stuff that's behind here, that what the nasty that we have, the violent people, like my territory, we are extremely dangerous. I mean, we had two of our firemen that were out on injury. They went, on a medical run, and they showed up. And probably one of my top 10 worst days on the at the job is hearing my brothers call on the radio, firefighter assist, we have two firemen injured. Like hearing them on the radio, and us having to jump that run because we know who's on that ambulance that day. And you know, they showed up to a run, and it was a medical call, and the guy supposedly had a seizure, and they were like, you know, let's just take you to the hospital. And the guy finally kind of said, like, you know, yeah, you're right, I'll go, let me go get my t-shirt. And he went to the back room, and the engineer that's driving the ambulance heard him cock his pistol and came back out, pointed the gun, like fired shots, started firing rounds at them, and they had to bail, you know, and both of them jumped off the second story balcony, you know, and they had to hide underneath a landing of an apartment. The guy was walking out still looking for them. And then once they got it clear, they took off running, and they both were, you know, one of our engineer ended up tearing his tricep. And I say he's my rookie, but he's like my little brother. He came to us when he was like 19. He's not a rookie anymore, but he's been with us ever since. And he ended up breaking his clavicle. And I mean, it was one of the like worst things to ever hear on the radio. Like, because it's one thing to hear it on the radio, it's another thing which your mind is racing on the way over there. Like, okay, what happened to them? You know, how are they going to be? It's kind of getting you mentally prepared to have to experience that. And luckily, you know, they it could have been worse than what it was, but it wasn't. You know, yeah, it's still, it was a lot of emotions that night, you know, a lot of, you know, yelling back and forth with, you know, nursing staff at the hospital. And, you know, just it was a probably one of the worst experiences ever. But that's where that love of the job comes in. You know, these guys end up coming back to work. Why did they come back to work? Because they love this job. You know, I've had, you know, harping on the mental health aspect of it. You know, like I said, 2017 and 2019 was probably one of the darkest times of my life. I was acting out. I was, you know, when I say acting out, it took someone to call me out on it, because we have a real big cigar culture, right? Like I say, okay, that we're real big on, you know, at the end of the night, we have a cigar table, you know, we sit there, no ranks matter, we're going to go and we're going to smoke cigars and talk and all that. And I'm a pioneer on that. I'd be like, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're going to go out and smoke cigars. But it was one day that I just was locked in my dorm all day. I didn't want to go out. And one of my guys, like, hey, we're going to go smoke cigars. And I said, no, I'm good, I'm a lay here. And that's when they knew something's wrong with Gutierrez, because he's not coming out to smoke cigars. Leading up to that, every weekend that I knew that I had a weekend shift, I was paying guys to work for me because I had to go out and drink. I had to. I was like, okay, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays, I'm drinking. You know, get pissed drunk and come home and pass out and do it all over again. Or there's times where I was driving into work the night before and I would pick up like a 24-pack of beer, driving 3-hour drive to Houston, drinking, you know, just to like numb whatever was numbing me, you know, and get to work. And I knew that, okay, well, I have to get drunk because that's the only way I'm going to go to sleep. And what it was, you know, the old fire service, man. And it's weird because it's changing, and it's recently changing, because before it was like you wouldn't talk about your emotions or what you saw. It was like a form of weakness. And and you know, my prior department, I had a very bad, like very bad luck with a lot of calls that we made that involved children. I mean, I had a Father's Day wreck that killed two kids and a dad. I mean, my very last shift there, we had a 12-year-old kid that hung himself in his garage, and I'm like, and he was still hanging when we got there, and we had to take him down, and it was one of those like, no kid should have to endure this, and it wasn't really the scene itself, like the actual person, it was the scene around us, like the family scene, the grieving. It was a very dark, ominous feeling, like you just didn't want to be there. And but I would stuff that in. I'd be like, you know what, this shit didn't bother me, you know, it's whatever. Then I get on with Houston, and I start making all kinds of stuff,
right?
And then around 2017, man, it was one of those, I was just having to go party, drink, you know, doing stupid stuff, man. And it was around just before COVID, man. It was, it got too dark. I mean, I just couldn't function. I was having panic attacks at work, and they had to get the department of psychologist to talk to me. And like, he literally put the station out of service, and he's like, hey, come talk to me. And I talked to him, and he's like, you need to go home right now. And I was unfit for duty for like 6 months. They sent me home for 6 months because of my mental health. They're like, hey, you know, you're not, because I'm not the kind of person to hurt myself. I don't have the balls to do that. But there was times where I was understanding why people did that. I'm like, okay, I get it now. You know, this that is an easy way out. I get it. And that's when I started having those thoughts where I was like justifying it. That's when I got scared. And I'm like, okay, you know, I need to talk to somebody. And finally, I took the steps to, you know, to talk to people and to get the help that I needed, to where now, you know, I can, I'm a, when it comes to mental health, man, I'm an advocate for that. Like, I'm going to, if you're going through something, like, hey, let's talk about it. Maybe I can help you out, you know, because the last thing I want is someone to call me that, hey, you know, you freaking blew your brains out somewhere when you could have just picked up the phone and talked to me.
Right.
And, you know, my wife, you know, she, you know, cause I would act out, you know, I would be home and be very just angry, just I don't want to talk to anybody, or, you know, I'd yell, and she knew, like, you need to start talking to me. If you're going through something, like, I need to know, because it's unfair to them, my family, because like, they don't know what's going on. And I was like, I don't want to bring, you know, work home or bring home to work. But unfortunately, in our career field, you can't avoid that. You know, if you have going through something at home, you're going to bring it to work. And if you're going to something at work, you're going to bring it home. And you may not even be doing it. You know, you're doing it regardless of trying to avoid it. It's going to come out somewhere. And it's funny because it had gotten bad, because when I was acting out, man, it got even to the point where, like, I ended up like cheating on my wife. And it was probably the worst thing I could have ever done. And my wife had found out. And the pain that I saw that I gave her, like, it was almost as if, like, somebody, like, stabbed her. She was, like, on the fetal position on the ground crying. And I was, like, I was hurting so bad knowing that. I was, like, man, I did this to you. And, but she is such a amazing woman that she knew. She's, like, I know that it's not you. You're going through this mental health crisis. You're going through, you know, your PTSD. She goes, I knew that I lost my husband in 2017. Like, she even said that. She goes, from 2017 to 2019, I lost my husband. You had died somewhere. That was her thing. Because I was a completely different person. It was just such a dark, I hate that person. Every time I think about that person, I hate that person. And I remember I was very vocal about it on social media. And the first person to kind of reach out was James Denny. And he sent me a text. And he goes, hey, man, it takes, you know, it takes a lot to be vocal about what you went through.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but the fact that you have a wife that's standing by your side, he goes, you need to be there for her more than ever now. You need to figure out, you need to figure this out, and you need to change your life around. And he goes, he'll tell me that I'm here to, you know, help you out. You know, if you need to talk to somebody. And I always knew that. And it's weird because, like, he lives in Del Rio, and he just texts me out of nowhere just to, like, hey, you know, he knew something was wrong. He goes, hey, I'm here to help you out. And I needed that. I needed someone to be like, hey, you know what? You're going to get through this. You know, you're not alone. You know, people have gone through it before. And even till this day, we made a bad run, you know, a couple of years ago. And my captain knew something was going on. And now, you know, I'm a real big person on, if something's wrong, I'm going to say, yeah, okay, something's not right. And he had asked me, he's like, Gutierrez, are you okay? And I was frogging up. Like, I almost, like, was trying to hold back tears. And I go, you know what, Captain, I'm not. And I go, and this is why. And I was explaining this call that we had made. And he was like, well, let's talk about it. You know, let's go out of service. And it was a, like, I needed that. He's a part of a, we have a CISM, Critical Incident Stress Management.
Okay.
So, he's a part of that team. So he knows, like, how to talk to you and how to kind of, it's good to talk to someone that can relate. Because I was talking to, like, other, you know, psychologists and psychologists or psychiatrists about what I was going through, and some that can't relate to our job. The first thing that they tell you is, why don't you just get a new career? Or, you know, they'll be like, you know, why are you going to continue to work a job that has such a negative outcome on your mental health? Or, you know, here's this drug, here's that drug, take this, take that. Yep. I'm like, I don't want to be medicated.
Yep.
I had guys that would be on leave for mental health, and they come back with dependency issues because now they're they're snowed up on all kinds of stuff because they need this pill for this and this pill for that. And I'm like, no, that's not what I need, you know? And I ended up going like faith-based counseling. My dad's a pastor.
Okay.
And so I ended up going faith-based counseling because I go, I needed something that just completely, I don't want a doctor to push drugs on me because I don't need that. And I ended up, there's a first responder network that had one of our chaplains, and we sat there and Matt just like for hours, Matt cried with him, talked to him about everything. And he was able to kind of lock in my thoughts and be like, he goes, now that you're talking about it, we can move forward. Now that it's off your chest, because I had a lot of stuff that I had to get out. Because it was just imploding. Like I was falling apart. I was a very, very toxic person. Bitter towards the world, just showing up and doing, you know, half-average shit at work, you know, bad attitude, you know, just bitter and negative. I could find a negative, or you could tell me something positive, and I'd find a negative out of it easily, no matter what. And I was never in the right mind frame. But once I finally got the help that I needed, man, it made a world of a difference in my overall outcome of my mental health and my life. To this day, I mean, like now, if I go through stuff, like I know, like, hey, I know the triggers. I know, like, okay, this is what I'm feeling. You know, I got to talk to somebody. That's one thing I always want to tell new firemen that come in this job is that, yes, this job is the glory, fighting fire and all that. It's phenomenal, but you are going to see stuff that you're not ready for. You know, I there's stuff that we see that I would never even wish on my enemy to ever see. I mean, no one should have to see the stuff that we see, but we're here for that reason. You know, God put us here for a purpose, you know, and we're here to, you know, be that punching bag to somebody, or be, you know, have to smell the smells and see the things that we see, but we're here for that. We're servants. We're here to, you know, do that job for them. That's what we're here for. And you have to understand that if you feel something, it's okay to feel it. It's okay to hurt. You cry about it, it's okay to cry. Mm-hmm. It's not a form of weakness. You know, you're only human. If you see something that's not affecting you, then you really need to evaluate yourself, because it's okay to hurt. You know, it's okay to, you know, but at the end of the day, don't beat yourself up about it. You know, even if the outcome wasn't, you know, what you want it to be, at the end of the day, it's not your fault. You know, at the end of the day, yes, we are in the jobs of, we're in the business of saving lives, but it's really not it. What we do is we entertain this patient until God decides whether it's their time or not. We're just used as a tool. And you have to understand that, hey, we're the hands to be there at the right time. You know, we're the shining sky in their darkest day. Like, that's what we're here for. You know, we're here when they need us the most. And regardless of the outcome, you have to have that satisfaction of knowing, you know what, I did everything I needed to do, you know, regardless of whatever happened. And, you know, you're going to come across things that are going to affect you. Everyone has that one call that never leaves them. You know, I have numerous someone, you know, but you have that compounding interest of like traumatic stuff that you're going to see, like, and you may not know that, oh, this is not going to affect me right now, but it will eventually. And you have to learn to expect it to come, but know how to handle it the correct manner. You know, there's million ways around it. You know, I made a complete change this last like November. I got real big on physical fitness, man. I started at 270. I'm at 215 right now.
Damn.
You know, just
good
on,
for you. Congrats
on just on working out. Just, but you know what, like, and that's been kind of my release of kind of to break away from this negative, you know, banter sometimes, this stuff that we have to see. This has been my therapy, and it works. And like, I always tell people, like, whoever needs something, that if you're going through something, like, give me a call, man. I'll talk to you, man. We can relate to a lot of things. You'd be surprised how much a lot of us can relate just by one conversation. You know, we're all going through something. And, you know, I'll be more than happy to be here and talk to y'all.
Oh man, that's that. I love your whole notion on the topic of mental health, because the way you stated it is the way so many firemen feel like, well, if I cry, if they see me cry, if they see me talk about this, ask questions, like you are looked at as less of, when that's not the case. And the sad thing is, in this profession, we have individuals who think that they are better than others, who put themselves on a pedestal, who look at the individual who cries or wants to talk about the call as weak. And it's like, man, if that's how you are, like, to me, you're in the wrong field. Like, this is not an atmosphere where we need to chastise each other, because you 100% hit the nail on the head, man. We see things that we are not supposed to see. We are not wired to see that. We are not wired to have to tell the family members that are grieving, like, hey, I'm sorry, we tried everything. Unfortunately, this person did not make it. Like, the car wrecks, anything with kids, now that I have a kid, totally changes the fucking game for me. Like, it sucked before I had kids, but once you have a kid, at least for me, all I can imagine is that kid might be my kid. And as a parent, what the hell we're having to go through. You know what I'm saying? So I 100% couldn't have said it better. And I will say, for anybody out there who knows of, or hell, even if you listen to this, which in my experience, most of the people that need to listen to podcasts, especially positive reaffirming podcasts, don't. They just don't, because they think that they're better than that. They're better than outside training, better than conferences. You know, we are looked at as, why do you spend your money and time going to these stupid conferences to make yourself better? Like, you know, that's just the mentality that they have. But my message to the ones who do that, who belittle their rookies, who treat them like shit because they were treated like shit and just continue that shitty cycle, is, I mean, I'm going to respectfully say this. It's a big fuck you. Like, If you make fun of somebody that has an issue or is feeling vulnerable, man, don't shit on them. Like, that is completely going against what the fire service is. It is supposed to be us to be united, be here for one another, to pick each other up when we're all down, because there's going to be different seasons of life, man. Like, if you, God forbid, like, you lose a parent, you're not going to be yourself until you finally, like, come to peace with that. So you never know. And you mentioned it early, man, you never know people's life experiences before this fire department. So I always go back, like, treat the individual like you'd want to be treated. You know what I'm saying? Because I know if I came to my captain or whatever, and I had issues, and then, you know, it gets out in the department, man, if I were, God forbid, if I were to hear that person talk shit about me, man, it's on. Like, it's on. I'll probably lose my job for that one, because I'm going to let you have it, because you're just a piece of shit at that point. So I 100% respect your whole, number one, thank you for telling that, because a lot of people don't want to do that, man. That's how social media is, man. Everybody just wants to show the good videos, the good pictures, the good times, but nobody really wants to show the struggle that it took to get there. They just want people to know, hey, like, everything is honky-dory perfect. No, that's why I show videos where I can improve on things, because I'm fucking human. And to these keyboard warriors or people that they're just going to talk, they're just shit talkers. Don't give them the platform, you know, don't give them that satisfaction of, oh, they got to me. Man, fuck you. Just keep it moving.
Yeah. Fuck average, be uncommon. As simple as that.
It's crazy. It's crazy, man. But no, seriously, Mike, man, we've been probably a little over an hour and a half, man, just talking. No. That's good, man. It's because I wanted you talking to you through text, seeing the stuff that you do in Houston, the jobs that you guys get to go to. Number one, it makes me very envious. But, oh, and that was another thing I wanted to touch on, too. You know, you mentioned how when you were little, you always wanted to work at a big city fire department. And there's no shame in that. But I'm saying that to say this. For individuals who don't work for a Houston, a Dallas, Orlando, New York, Philly, all the big metropolitan areas, man, don't shit on your organization just because it's little. Because it's the same calls, might be a different frequency of volume, but we all go to the same type of calls just on a different scale. So if your station is one station, if it's a one station department or 150, treat it the same. Treat it like that. If your goal was to get on that non-small suburban urban fire department, man, make it like that big city shit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It all comes down to that company pride, man. Take pride in ownership, no matter the size of the department, because no matter where you work at, you can learn something from each and every single department. I mean, I picked up, for all the departments I've worked at, I picked up something everywhere I went, you know, from minimum staffing, you know, to shitty ass trucks, to, you know, crews that are not motivated. You pick up things and you learn how to adapt and overcome and have that pride and ownership to wherever you're at. It doesn't matter, no matter the size of the job, we all do the same job. You know, it just comes in different forms, you know, different call volumes and all that, you know. Do I like getting my teeth kicked in every night? Absolutely not. Sometimes I envy other departments that sleep all night. Like, man, I'd rather sleep all night than, you know, make all these damn runs, you know, 5-6 after midnight, you know. But no, absolutely, man. It doesn't matter the size of the department. You can learn something, whether it's volunteer or career, man. It doesn't matter. You know, you're still putting on a uniform. Nobody knows the difference. It's a fire truck. You know, we're all part of this one big family, this big organization, this brotherhood. You know, and you just got to have that drive to, you know, you can change it. You know, it's that ripple effect. You know, it takes one person to go out there and start drilling, and the next person going to follow, and the next person going to follow. Before you know it, you've kind of changed that whole fabric of that organization just by having one person. It takes one person to change it and create that ripple effect, and just, you know, fuck the haters on that side. You know, just, you're going to have people that are going to be negative, you know, let them be negative. You know, they're probably going through their own shit, but you know what? Let them do them. You do you, and have fun while you're doing it, man. Cause this is probably this is the greatest damn job in the fucking world. You know,
that's fine.
I fucking love it.
There's no way to put it, man. There really isn't. There's no way to put it. When you realize the history and the tradition behind the department and you want to keep it going, I mean, I don't know how else to explain it. I just know that I came into it as a volunteer and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I could probably do this as a career. And then I started going down, you know, my journey, and I hit a point where I was questioning whether or not, like, I really wanted to be here. And all it took was getting outside my comfort zone, going to an outside conference and seeing other people, the message being stated of, it's okay to love the job. And if you want to love it, this is what you have to continue to do. And it started clicking. And I'm like, okay, I got this. And then, you know, it is what it is. Everything's taken off from there. So I just want to say, man, thank you for accepting the invite, coming to Talk Shop, spreading nothing but truth bombs, gems, and knowledge out there, man, for others to know it's okay to love the fucking job. So
hell yeah, bro. Hell yeah, man. Love having you, man. Love being here, dude. It was awesome.
Yes, and trust me, I will make my way down to Texas, and I will definitely hit. There is no way I can't not go down and not hit you up, because I'd like to come and maybe get my teeth kicked in too, depending on how long we can stretch it for.
Oh yeah, man. We'll get you on a roof. We'll get you a couple of holes. They popping tops and banging thoughts out here.
I love it, man. I love it. No, Mike, seriously, man. Truly, it's been an honor, man. Really good conversation.
Hell yeah, brother. Appreciate it, man.
All right, pal.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.